Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $389 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to the latest shift of the Ice Time podcast here at buffalonews.com. I'm new sports columnist Mike Harrington, joined as always by Sabres beat reporter Rachel Lindsay. In the wake of the end of the Sabres season in a stunning Game 7 overtime loss to the Montreal Canadiens on Monday night, and we're going to certainly go back through that game in a little bit, but Rachel, a lot of news developed here in the last couple days as the Sabres did their breakup interviews. And let's start with the big item, your reaction initially to something we probably figured was coming, but the official news that Lindy Ruff has signed a two-year contract extension and is going to come back to make another run at the Stanley Cup here in Buffalo.
I was not surprised that the news dropped on yesterday. I was just surprised about the timing of it all, literally as I was walking back into the media room as we were going through interviews for breakup day. And I said, oh, I wonder if they planned it at this time as well. It was, 1:30 in the afternoon, you know, that the convenient news drop for us to get our stories up online to, you know, kind of process the information. Not that there needed a lot of processing. Not that it was like, oh my God, this was almost a foregone conclusion at this point that Lindy Ruff was going to come back to the Buffalo Sabres to coach for another 2 years. You had a conversation with him, in Washington, I believe it was,
yes,
where you had asked him one-on-one about the contract renegotiations. His contract was up at the end of this calendar year. I call it the NHL fiscal year, as I like to refer to it as. And it was one of those things where he had said, you know, we're going to put this on the back burner right now. We've had the conversations. It's going to work out. I did not lack confidence that the Sabres were going to re-sign Lindy Ruff. And it was interesting listening to his comments yesterday after the announcement was signed, when he sat down with the local media to kind of go over the season. It was one of these, the first year was a little tough. I really had to implement my philosophies. The second year, I saw more guys buying into it. There was more of a push-pull. The comment I really like, where he's like, I had to talk to my assistant coach about doing this, is his wife, who he had to get the input from as well. And he said something he said something that his wife had said, Lindy, you got the disease. You're not getting out of it now. You know, it's like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. So she didn't say that, but that was just my comment. But we should not be surprised by this. The Sabres wanted continuity, especially after they finally figured out a formula to end a 15-year playoff drought. And one of the things I really like about Lindy Ruff, and I really believe this is kind of a hallmark of his legacy as a coach. We usually apply legacy to, looking back at something that's over. But Lindy, again, I tell the joke all the time. First time the Sabres hired Lindy Ruff as a head coach, I was still using a fake ID. You do the math. But I love that Lindy Ruff has evolved as a coach, that he knows what worked in 1997, 1998 may not work in 2025, 2026, but he has the information. He looks at the players' personalities. It's very calculated in what he does to really motivate a team or correct things or whatnot. It's every time I hear the name Lindy Ruff, I think, evolve, evolution.
So, Rachel, what were your thoughts on what you heard from the players on Thursday? Many of the veteran players talking about Lindy Ruff and how he makes them comfortable and uncomfortable moments, but he also is definitely still hard on them in some of those video sessions, and they kind of gave us a glimpse behind the curtain, so to speak.
Right. I laughed when a couple of the players said, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because I felt like in a way that was my own kind of catchphrase for the playoffs and covering my first NHL full playoffs, was that, oh God, I'm uncomfortable, but nope, this is how it's going to be. And they grew to understood that as well. We also heard the other term that I kept thinking of as they're talking about the video sessions and how sometimes constructive criticism had to flow in order for this team and these players to make improvements. What's Lindy saying? Share the morning coffee. Yeah, it's good to bring it out, but it's when you really sit down and talk about, like, here's what's going wrong. Here's what we need to do better. Here's what you need to do to be more accountable. People think of share the morning coffee and sharing as being a good thing. I'm going to bring you into this, but hey, we got to share all grievances as well. We got to share all the issues that we have to confront and repair for us to move forward and to be successful.
We heard from a bunch of players on Wednesday, Thursday, Tuesday, Wednesday, what days were that? This is what happens in the playoffs. You don't know what day of the week it is.
And I'm just kind of go behind, you know, another one I said about they get comfortable being uncomfortable. Share with the audience. One of the things I think I said to you and I said to a couple of the other reporters, there were days in this playoff run, I didn't even know what day of the week it was anymore. I'd say, Mike, it's game six, isn't it? That's all I knew. I knew what game was coming up. It's game five. It's game six. There's a morning skate. There's not a morning skate. We go to the hotel to meet the team. Your whole life is dictated by what game it is, what practice it is, what hotel you're going to meet the players at, you know, where you have to be at certain times. The calendar ceases to exist as we know it during the playoffs.
And I did pretty good with that during the playoffs, but I obviously just flubbed it here as I dropped out of what happened. The Sabres lost game seven on Monday night. And like they do any other season, you go right into your breakup day or locker cleanout day, even though we're not in the locker room to see them cleaning anything out anymore. So Tuesday and Wednesday, we heard from a bunch of players. Mm-hmm. Most of the younger players were Tuesday. Most of your big-name veterans were on Wednesday. And let's think of what we heard from some of these veteran guys on Wednesday. I think the biggest takeaway has to be the session we had with Alex Tuch. And for those of you who may have missed it, after Game 7, most of the players, of course, were already gone. Darlene was waiting to be interviewed. Thompson was going to be interviewed. Alex Tuch was still sitting at his locker in full equipment.
Full equipment, pants, full uniform, socks, still wearing a jersey. Yep.
Still on. The only thing he had off were his skates. And it looked, it was a tough scene. He was, you know, staring straight ahead. It was almost as if he was saying, I can't take this jersey off because I know this may be the last time I do it. So Alex Tuch's session on Wednesday was very telling. My initial impression was, sure, he wants to come back. Sure, he's connected to Buffalo. He grew up a Sabres fan. His son now loves being announced as a Buffalo Sabre. But how many times, Rachel, did Alex Tuch say, I'm going to do what's best for my family? It sure sounded like it's all going to come down to dollars and cents. What did you have as a takeaway from what you heard from Alex Tuch?
Upgrade your home with Express Windows, your local source for windows, doors, and siding. Window installations start at just $389 with a lifetime warranty on parts and labor. Our streamlined process delivers the fastest installation in just 5 to 7 weeks. From consultation to cleanup, our pros make it easy, affordable, and built to last. Visit ExpressWindowsInc.com to get started today. Express Windows, value, speed, and craftsmanship for every home.
What did you have as a takeaway from what you heard from Alex Tuch?
I lost count also of how many times he kept saying, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry. You know, there was almost a tone of being apologetic. Like, I couldn't quite interpret that. Like, it was almost like, I'm sorry to have to put you all through this as well. And I free agency, it's a tough go because you have to make the decision. And one of the things that Alex Tuch said, I just can't make this decision about dollars and cents. I have to think about my family. I have to think about where I want to raise my kids. I have to think about what situation's best for me as well, too. This is going to be a very difficult decision for Alex Tuch. It is not just about the money. It is about the quality of life. And I'm glad he explained that because it kind of peels back a little bit of the curtain of what players go through when they make this kind of decision. It's one thing, and we all talked about this yesterday. If you're 25, 26 years old, you don't have kids, you can break a lease, you can pick up and move. There's a level of freedom there. But when you have, he has three children now, he lives in Claris. He's, you know, Tate Thompson said, I live across the street from him. He collects my trash. He knows all the neighbors' names. When you have ensconced yourself in a community as well, and the players don't want him to leave. Even Rasmus Dahlin said, I would give anything to have this guy back. Players don't want him to leave, but they also understand, and in seeing all of this and in their careers, this is a decision. This is a big decision someone has to make. And I do not blame Alex Tuch if he stays. I do not blame Alex Tuch if he goes, knowing everything that has to go in it. But then the question becomes for the Sabres, how do you fill the void that Alex Tuch leaves? You know, when this is one, not a great free agent class. Alex Tuch is probably the best free agent, you know, name that's going to be out there if the Sabres do not re-sign him before his contract expires June 30th. We have to be very clear on that also to our audience. And his contract expires June 30th. He becomes a free agent July 1st. And also that maybe, who knows, we might get an email or a notification here in the next week or two that Alex Tuch has been re-signed. There's so many directions this thing can go right now.
You know, but I'm a little cynical. I'm a little more cynical about this stuff. You know, I'm going to do what's best for my family, yada, yada, yada. I get it. You know what? If the Buffalo Sabres are offering $8 million and somebody else is offering $10.5 million, that's also going to be doing what's best for my family. I think Alex Tuch has a number in mind, and his agent has a number in mind of his value. And I think he's still playing off his Vegas contract, which is 4.75. So obviously Alex Tuch has been playing at a very low number.
He's
for
going
a while.
To make some money. He's definitely going to make, I definitely think that money will double for him. You know, Adrian Kempe, as we talked about yesterday from the Los Angeles Kings, that's the standard for which Alex Tuch's next contract aspires to.
And what Adrian, did he get?
Yeah, and Adrian Kempe got eight, and it was eight and at least $10 million. I couldn't remember the numbers right off, but I said, God, that's the thing. Yeah, eight and 10.625 annually, and I mean that's a big chunk of change. Granted, you know, another thing that works, the salary cap goes up this year. But here's the kind of the other rub: Alex Tuch isn't the only guy the Sabres have to worry about.
Thank you,
Beck Malenstein. The hitman, leader, team leader in hits, the physical fourth line presence, he becomes an unrestricted free agent. Zach Benson is an RFA this summer. Peyton Krebs is an RFA this summer. Michael Kesslering. You've got Luke Shen, Tanner Pearson, Logan Stanley, who came over in trades right before the deadline. They were rentals.
They're gone.
Kind of, you know, Michael Kesslering. The other question is, do they keep Colton Ellis? You know, he's not a free agent, but that's a very question. That's a question. That's another one we can discuss later. But Mike, roll into that. We went through the list of kind of the other guys you have to worry about besides Alex Tuch to keep the chemistry of this team together.
Well, and I think we heard from Jarmo Kekalainen, and obviously he said point blank, he wants to lock up Zach Benson long-term, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of what he gave Josh Doan. The other thing Jarmo Kekalainen made very clear was he wanted to lock up Bowen Byram long-term and keep this top four defense core together. Now, Jarmo Kekalainen said, we still want Alex Tuch. He has never changed his tune on that. But he was certainly not remotely as definitive talking about Alex Tuch as he was talking about Zach Benson and Bowen Byram.
He talked about Zach Benson like he was, you know, a godsend. Like he was the like, I don't know if prodigal son's the right word, but the language he used, I love Zach Benson so much, what he does for this team, the way he plays. I said, oh my gosh, you know, it's made it sound like Jarmo was making Zach Benson a priority over Alex Tuch. And I had asked Jarmo, you know, is Alex Tuch re-signing him a priority? And he gave me a very guarded answer. And I understand I wasn't taking that personally. I didn't think it was personal against Alex Tuch. I was like, Jarmo is going into what I call like, quote unquote, Darth Jarmo mode, that, you know, he went to the road of being a negotiator and a general manager and a business person when answering that question. That's how I took Jarmo's answer to, you know, is Alex Tuch a priority?
Yeah, and I think some of that is they know where some of the negotiations went before they stopped talking during the playoffs. And I thought Alex Tuch, maybe it affected his play against Montreal. He insists there wasn't an injury. Ice time indicates there wasn't an injury. I let Alex Tuck's mood changed during the series against Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
Some of that was he wasn't playing well, but I just thought he was very guarded, less enthusiastic about the playoffs. That there was something bothering him.
Yes.
And you never know what these guys have going on in their personal lives. But the other thing I was thinking, I wonder if something's bothering him about what he's hearing about the contract, about what the Sabres are talking about what the agent is talking about. And it was very strange to see that and coincide with Alex Tuch having his longest point drought as a member of the Buffalo Sabres at absolutely the worst possible time. So all that played into then what we hear from Jarmo Kekalainen on Wednesday talking about these other guys, you know, Benson, Byram, all the priorities here, and it just did not seem like Alex Tuch was going to be one of those priorities. And even Jarmo brought up, well, there's this thing called the salary cap. And I'm like, geez, that doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement here. That almost sounded like preparing the fan base for Alex Tuck's departure, talking about all the young players we have who can step up and Kulik will be back. And realistically, we know Yarmo's going to make a couple deals. But I didn't think Wednesday was a great day if you're in the sign Alex Tuck camp and the Buffalo Sabres fan base. It wasn't a great day for you.
No. And you brought up the point about Alex Tuck's mood. The Montreal series, when we met with the team at the hotel, and he came in and talked to us. And I even said to you afterwards, Alex Tuck does not want to be here right now. And I didn't take it personally because he always makes comments about, oh, I have to talk to you guys, you know, and I'm kind of like, oh, no, you feel about
but
it.
But he always says it with a smile.
He always says, it with a smirk, you know, so we can't take too much on that. But it was one of these, it was, and I even said to you, I said, I don't think it had anything to do with his media obligations. I said,
no,
you said, maybe he got some news on his contract. I said, maybe there's something going on with his family. As we know, a year ago, his youngest child was born prematurely, had to go into the NICU unit as well. You know, his wife is pregnant again. There's another thing. There's a whole laundry list of things that could be on Alex Tuck's mind during a very, very intense part of the season, the playoffs. I mean, you go to a different level in the playoffs. It's, you know, you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And there's so many things we don't know about as far as what those guys are going through during the playoffs as well. But I reading the tea leaves, I mean, this is going to be a tough contract negotiation if Alex Tuck wants to stay with the Buffalo Sabres or if he gets other offers elsewhere.
So obviously there's a lot to watch going forward here on contracts, but we'll certainly be doing that. We'd be remiss, obviously. We have to talk about this playoff series.
Okay.
Certainly in my life watching Sabres playoff series, this is one of the more unique ones we've ever seen. We've never seen a series where the buildings are as crazy as these two fan bases were. The Bell Center, it was pretty funny watching the Buffalo media, who had never been to the Bell Center before, get their first taste of it and just eyes out the back of their heads, bugged out for how crazy the thing got.
Oh, it's nuts. I didn't expect my video to become an international incident either, of the guy in the Jack Quinn jersey.
Well, you can thank Paul Bissonnette for that.
I got the biz bump for it as well.
The biz bump.
Exactly. So thank you, Paul Bissonnette, if you are listening, for increasing my social media following. So, but it was just one of these, to me, it was that video I took of a, you can look on my Instagram account, rlindsayreporter, of a guy in a Jack Quinn jersey walking into a mob of Canadiens fans outside of Bell Center, and they're booing him and singing along, and people are, you know, screaming at him. But it, to me, it was right before game six, and it kind of symbolized, all right, you know, the Sabres went into the belly of the beast and they came out okay there. You know, they forced that seventh game, but let's go into that seventh game.
I don't have a lot of respect for that dude, by the way. He brought his girlfriend with him through all those Canadian fans. It wasn't real smart.
I was gonna say, that's a damn good girlfriend.
Yeah. So, all right. So it was a series that went back and forth. We all know the details. The Sabres lose three times at home. They win twice in the Bell Center. The thing that is going to stick out to people, you think back to, you know, if you're old enough to think back to 2001, where they lost in overtime in Game 7 at home to Pittsburgh, to Darius Kasparaitis' goal. Really, you don't remember much about that series, other than maybe Mario Lemieux's fluky tying goal in Game 6 and the overtime winner. This thing down the road, all the things that happen in this series are really going to be capsulized into Game 7. And the Sabres have won one Game 7 in their history over 56 years. The Montreal Canadiens have won two Game 7s, both on the road, both by a goal, in a span of 2 weeks.
In the last month, it was Alex Newhook, Monsieur Game 7.
Unbelievable. So I guess the first thing that strikes out to me, and the first thing that I want to hear what your first thing pops out, the first thing that hits me is 39 shots on goal, 91 shot attempts, two goals. So everybody out there wants to dump on Lukanen for the overtime goal, and I get it. And maybe I want to save there, but it was a knuckle puck. It did hit something. It did change direction, and people really need to look at the replay and make that point. But having said that, I can't get past 91 shot attempts and two goals. They didn't score enough on a goaltender who was really reeling in Game 5 and Game 6.
Jakub Dobesh came back with his best Ken Dryden effort, his best Patrick Waugh effort, his best Yaroslav Halak effort, for lack of a better term. I mean, he really was the start of it. And the thing that just I think about as well is with this team in this series, more this series. This is a series where it went seven games. Neither team could take the momentum off a win. It was like a pendulum swinging back and forth. Nobody wanted to grab it and pull it in their direction. And I know, I think I'd originally picked the Sabres in five, and I'm usually wrong on those predictions. But I said to you, I said to a couple of other reporters, I said to my husband, I said, this is going seven. This is the way the Canadians are playing, the way nobody can take control of the series. It is going seven games. And when the Sabres tied it and went to overtime, it was one of these, all right, let's take a deep breath and hold it for the next however many X seconds. To me, the fact that it went to overtime just epitomized the momentum swing back and forth in this entire series.
You know, I look at this thing. If you tell me before this series that the line of Slavkovsky, Suzuki, and Caulfield are going to score one goal at 5-on-5 in a seven-game series, I would say it ain't going to be seven games. It's going to be over by game five. It's almost unbelievable to me how the Sabres turned Alex Newhook. I joked at one point in the series, they're turning Alex Newhook into Steve Shutt. You know, look up your 1970s Canadian if you're not old enough. Right. If Steve Shutt was a great left winger, he wasn't, you know, he was a guy who once scored 60 goals, but Alex Newhook became the star. What did he have, six goals, seven goals
Something
in that series?
Like that, but yeah.
You know,
yeah,
just ridiculous.
I just think the two-game winners, again, most of your game seven, you know.
Right.
He was the one who stepped up, and he played in the Stanley Cup in 2022. He was Bowen Byram's teammate with the Avalanche.
Right. What did Lindy say during his locker cleanout interview? He watched that 2-on-1 in overtime, and he said, we're winning the game right here. And we're going to watch that 2-on-1 with Tage Thompson and Zach Benson for the rest of our lives. As Thompson's going down the ice, he's got to shoot the puck, or he's got to pass to Benson for the tap-in, and he picked door number three. He picked the toe drag, and he toe dragged himself into the ice, into traffic, and didn't get much of a shot off. Now, I get it, and people have made this point to me on Twitter, and I get it. Almost the same play Thompson made on the golden goal at the World Championships last year in Stockholm. But if you watch the replay of that one, he had a lot more room to work with coming down the ice, going into the zone as well. You just had to score a goal there. And you just felt, oh boy, that was their big opportunity. And it went away without even a great shot on goal. And the Canadians go down, and again, and you know Darlene had mentioned it right after the game, mention it again. They're sick about what happened on the winning goal. Mm-hmm. Darlene and Thompson got screwed up and they flubbed the puck at the offensive zone blue line and the puck went the other way and they never got it back because it was in the back of their net.
And I think back to that Tage Thompson toe drag. I'm not sure if that was a sign of the Sabres collective inexperience in the playoffs. Tage Thompson, at this point, he's got to be exhausted. He has played how many preseason games? He played in the World Championship a year ago in Stockholm and helped the United States win a gold medal. He played in the Olympics and celebrated like an Olympian. He even said during his ex interview, I'm not going to lie, I hit a wall several times. I hit walls during the season. And I'm going to lean more toward, in fact, that move came, that was a sign of the Sabres collective inexperience. If you, and I, how many times have I said to you with a young player, you know, give him a year from now, he will score on that goal. Give him a year from now, he will stop that shot. Give him a year from now, he will break up that play because he knows what to do. The Sabres did not know what to do in these critical situations. And that's just a lack of experience. There's nothing you can do about that except practice it, go through it, understand it, you know, and know not to fear those situations because that is the best way to battle fear and uncertainty is with confidence from what you have gained and what you've done.
You definitely lead into coming up. One of my stories in upcoming days in the Buffalo News is going to be the theme of my mind is none of these teams ever get to the promised land without heartache. Mm-mm. They just don't come out of nowhere and go to the big dance right away. And here was the Sabres, this group of Sabres, first big heartache in the playoffs, Game 7, Montreal. Now, the heartache also included, and it wouldn't be anything else, it wouldn't be Buffalo sports if it didn't include officiating. How would we ever get through a big game in Buffalo sports without talking about officiating? Two major, major moments in that game, in Game 7. Obviously, everyone's talking about the Beck Malenstein play, the tap-in, the puck leaks through Dobish. Wes McCauley blows a quick whistle, and they wipe out the goal. All right, so I want you to tell, you know, give the Cliff Note version of the Wes McCauley story you told me earlier today before we came on here. But my point is this simply about Wes McCauley. Jakub Dobish was not playing well enough and was is not a veteran goalie to have gotten that kind of quick whistle in that spot. That was a quick whistle you give to Patrick Waugh or a modern-day guy like Vasilevsky or Connor Hellebuck. That rookie goalie did not deserve that quick whistle. Now, tell me about Wes McCauley.
Wes McCauley, you know, he's the son of a longtime officiating chief, former Michigan State player. Fun trivia fact, you know, who's the only NHL guy still on the ice from 1990, the same year that Jaromir Jagr was drafted by the Pittsburgh Penguins? Wes McCauley. Wes is one of the NHL senior officials. I remember interviewing him years and years ago in Portland, Maine, and I asked him a lot about how he got into officiating, you know, why he felt this was something he would do. And one of the things he told me, and this is why I have confidence when I see Wes McCauley officiating a game, he said to me, he said, if you're going to be official, you have to know all the rules. You have to know the rule book in and out. And I can't remember the exact play, but he told me this story when he was officiating AHL games and Mike Foligno was coach of the Hershey Bears. There was a play that came up. Wes McCauley immediately waved off an empty net goal. And I think it was because it was somehow how it bounced off one player, and the play is ruled dead if it bounces off a player. I cannot remember this. I would never be an NHL referee because I don't know the exact rules. I'm sorry, Wes. But he went over to Mike Foligno. Mike Foligno is arguing the call. Wes McCauley laid out the call for him, said, this is what happened. This is the rule. This is why we are waving this off. And Mike Foligno just stopped and looked at him and said, you're right, aren't you? And he goes, I am. So anytime I see Wes McCauley officiating a game, I said, he knows the rule book in and out. He, you know, I have confidence in the thing he's going to make. And when he makes those calls, he knows what he's doing. And when he made that call, I said, Wes is doing, you know, Wes knows what he's doing. Wes has got the call right. The other thing I have found, and this is exclusive of any official, but, you know, kind of indicative of all of them in the NHL playoffs. One thing I've been finding during the NHL playoffs is we are seeing more officials calling penalties and calling infractions and, you know, calling things, blowing the whistle, because they are enforcing things to the letter of the law. The rules are being enforced the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law. Although I will say this also, it seemed like the referees also swallowed their whistles when it came to penalties. Because there were, what, two in Game 7, I think.
Basically,
two?
You get to the point sometimes they only call high-sticking and puck over the glass and nothing else.
Yeah, and then I think those are the two they call. I know one of them was the puck over the glass because I saw, Cole Caulfield do this.
Wes got it. He got to the right spot. Okay, I think that's not going to be a goal anyway. Jordan Greenway is going to get, if they call it a goal, Jordan Greenway is getting called for goalie interference for jabbing at Dobish's pads anyway. We've seen that call five times this year. That's not going to be a goal. All right, were they really, we saw Jarmo Kekäläinen on Wednesday clearly upset, and it didn't get a lot of talk in the aftermath of Game 7 because it was in the first period, was Philip Deneau's goal for Montreal, the first goal of the game. And the second it happened and we saw the replay, I said, that's a kick.
And I asked you, I said, is that the distinct kinking motion? I feel like we're watching these things like the Zapruder films at this point.
You know, he changed the direction of his skate. He made a move with his skate to deflect the puck in the net while he was in the crease. He had the right to be in the crease. The puck went in there first. But he clearly made a kicking motion. And they're saying that that was a redirection. Now, Lindy was very upset about that. He wanted a longer review. Jarmo said, we wanted a longer review. And, you know, fans are, oh, we should have challenged that. You can't challenge that play,
no,
people. All right? It's not a challengeable play.
We should make a list for people to reference of what are challengeable plays and what are not challengeable plays. Like a land and gauge of sorts for this, for the NHL rule.
It's frustrating to me. I would like to see the NHL go to baseball, where you get whatever you get. You get your two challenges. You can challenge anything, but you only can do it twice, and you lose them, they're gone. And the Sabres could have challenged that. Hey, that's a kick. That's a distinct kicking motion. That was reviewed. All goals are reviewed in Toronto, but that was reviewed very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, Lindy was trying to stall to get a longer review. That they just kept the game moving. That needed a lot longer look. The overhead clearly shows Deneau moving his skate, and you could tell yesterday Jarmo Kekäläinen was not happy that situation at all.
He
didn't get the kind of play that it should have got.
It didn't seem,
but you know what?
At the time, it didn't seem as consequential as it would be, I think, also. That is the other thing. Why, you know, we're now looking at everything in retrospect, what could have, what should have, what would have. So that's why we're really breaking these
game,
things down now.
Yeah, in a 3-2 game that goes overtime, a goal becomes very consequential when you sit there and say it shouldn't have been a goal. And you know, it's not the Brett Hall play. It's a little different. It does remind me a little bit of the Hudson Fashing play on Long Island a couple years ago that really impacted the Sabres in 2023 when they didn't make the playoffs. But you know what? Ultimately, 7 games, overtime of game 7, the Sabres were right there, one goal away from having us in Carolina right now as we speak, covering the Eastern Conference Finals. Lindy Ruff clearly bothered by that too, wanted another shot, wanted some revenge for 2006. That didn't happen also. Rachel, as we wrap this up here, just a quick thought. Do the Montreal Canadiens have any shot to beat the Carolina Hurricanes, who are 8-0 going into the start of this series?
My first thought is no. The Carolina Hurricanes are the 2026 version of what the 2008 Detroit Red Wings are. They are a machine. They are the personification of their coach, Rod Brind'Amour.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, and realistically, I would have picked the Sabres probably to lose in 5 games as well. Let's not forget, the Sabres have not won a game in the Nova Center since 2016. Mm-hmm. They have lost 13 in a row at Carolina. So it would have been a very difficult series. I sure wish we could have seen it to see how it would have played out, to see how Lindy Ruff would have matched with Rod Brind'Amour. But unfortunately, it didn't go that way. Alex Newhook with the goal in Game 7. The Sabres season is over. We move into off-season mode, combine mode, NHL draft in Buffalo. But we're going to have all that coverage for you. It's not really the off-season for us yet. Yeah. We're not talking off-season probably till July. So make sure you stay tuned at BuffaloNews.com and in the print editions of the Buffalo News for all the coverage going forward, because there's a lot still to talk about in the wake of this season and a lot going forward. So thanks for watching and listening here. For Rachel Lindsay, the Sabres beat reporter, I'm Mike Harrington. Thanks again.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.